Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. Our first case this morning, 2022-0724, Ohio Patrolmen's Benevolent Association versus the City of Cleveland. On behalf of the appellant, Ms. Chafin. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. At this time, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. My name is Danielle Chafin, and I am General Counsel to the Ohio Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. The 8th District's decision in this case cannot stand unless this court is prepared to overturn 40 years' worth of precedent or carve out an exception to that precedent. In Irvin v. Patrons Mutual Insurance Company, this court held that for purposes of Civil Rule 5, in order for service to be effective on a party by that party's attorney, the attorney must be the attorney of record in the trial court. An attorney of record is not established until he or she subscribes to a pleading or paper served and filed in that particular action. Irvin was a broad holding that provided a bright line rule and takes the guesswork out of whether a party is represented by an attorney, and if so, who is that attorney? Chapter 2711 incorporates by reference Civil Rule 5, something this court acknowledged in its previous decision in Cox. And as a result, all of the case law interpreting that rule must also apply in chapter.
Let me ask you a little bit about that.
Yes.
So to start, does it have to be either or? Does it have to be someone has to serve the attorney, or, you know, we have to have a bright line rule one way or the other? I mean, the statute says you serve either the attorney or the party. Why can't it be both?
Which
you would win, by
sure,
the way.
Sure. And I would love that interpretation, because in that scenario, we did serve the party, and so service would be effective. What the 8th District said is that because of that second, the end of the statute says as prescribed by...
Right, well, it says, and I don't have it in front of me, but it says in the, I think the words are in the manner prescribed by... Civil Rule 5. So why doesn't manner just, I mean...
Mean the method of service versus
method
who
of
we
service,
serve.
Right. Yes. I mean, that seems to me the most logical interpretation is that the statute says you serve either one, and the Rule 5 reference brings in the manner, whether you hand delivery, all those things. Why isn't that the right interpretation?
In the trial court, that's what we argued, and that is what the trial court held. That's what Judge Russo wrote in his opinion, that it says one or the other, and that the second half of that sentence means the manner in which you serve it. So it tells us, can you serve via email or how else? So I would say that, number one, that is the plain language interpretation. But in this scenario, I'm trying to... The 8th District has issued two different opinions in this on this issue that kind of counteract that. And so...
But we're not really bound by what
right,
the 8th
exactly.
District says.
So. I would say that, number one, that should be this interpretation, which is what we originally argued.
Is your position more so that you serve the party, being the City of Cleveland, by serving the law department?
Yes.
Or is it that the law department is the city's counsel?
It's,
or attorney of record?
So it's really both. The law department is the proper individual to accept service anytime you serve the city. So we serve them as the party, but the trial court also held that we serve them as the party's attorney, because there is an ordinance in Cleveland that says that the law department shall represent the City of Cleveland in any civil actions, unless there is a specific reason why they have hired outside counsel. I think they use the word special circumstances.
But let me take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you believe something denominated complaint, colon, application is the same as a motion to vacate?
Sure. So it's really more of a practicality scenario. So our office has filed applications to vacate in the form of a motion in the past, and clerk's offices will frequently reject them because there's not a case number associated with your motion. It's purely just a matter of course. And because that is, frankly, the reality, that I don't know of any other time where we initiate a case purely by filing a motion and not a petition or some other document, It really has been, complaints have been used by plaintiffs all across Ohio to initiate these types of proceedings. And I don't think it's the form that should matter. It should be the substance, which is something that this court has said since the early, since the late 1800s. Well, all of the substance was there.
In that regard, the Court of Appeals said that the arguments you asserted, or the, I'll say arguments for lack of a word, but the Court of Appeals said there were no arguments there.
Right, and I think that if you look at the document that we filed, that's frankly untrue. We complied with 2711.14, which is the statute that says what you must attach to an application or motion to vacate. I attached the underlying collective bargaining agreement and the arbitration award. And within that complaint, I articulated the very specific reasons why I felt that the arbitration award must be overturned, because the arbitrator ignored a contract entered into between the parties, explicitly said he was not going to consider that. So there are citations to the record for why he should have considered the memorandum and why he was inappropriate to not consider it. So I frankly disagree that the document did not give notice for why we were appealing.
And so going back to, I guess, just answer Justice Fisher's question, why you said it was captioned complaint, application to vacate. But because if you had filed motion to vacate, there would have been no case number associated with that motion?
Right. Clerks, sometimes the clerks, I mean, they're not the most familiar with these types of proceedings. They're relatively rare. And so we've had motions kicked back to us.
But is there a case number that the clerk's office just missed?
No. No. When I initiate these types of actions, it's the first time it's ever hitting an actual court, so there is no case number.
So. Technically or procedurally, internally, the only way to get a case number
is to file a complaint.
Yes. That's interesting.
So
nobody's reconciled that over the years. Huh?
Why did you not serve Zashin and Rich, the law firm?
Sure. This court has drawn a very clear distinction between a party's attorney and a party's attorney of record. And so at the time I'm initiating this, Irvin is good law. The 8th District had not yet issued its decision in this case or the CPPA case, and frankly, like you said, they can't overturn this court's law. There is a difference between an attorney and attorney of record. Irvin says that Mr. Crissy could not have been their attorney of record until he subscribes to a pleading served and filed in this particular case. And there have been multiple circumstances and other cases where other courts have looked at these types of proceedings and said that the arbitration attorney is not your attorney of record. And I think the really big reason why we have to draw a distinction here and why we have to say that Mr. Crissy can't start out being the attorney of record when I initiate a case is because in an arbitration, when a decision is issued, the arbitrator's power is functus officio. The matter is considered completely closed. So there's no formal way for the City of Cleveland to let me know as the opposing party or let the arbitrator know as the neutral person that they've switched attorneys.
But wouldn't Zashin and Rich have a professional responsibility if they were served with a motion to vacate? If they were not going to serve as their counsel continuing, that they would forward it to the person who would? I mean, the attorneys have to answer to us, too, for professional conduct.
Sure, and I think what we're really doing is taking control away from the client to have a say in who their representation is. The City of Cleveland, which is what Mr. Crissy acknowledged at the trial court, could have fired him as soon as the arbitration was over. They could have chose to represent themselves. So,
but you didn't know that.
Exactly, which is why I think the safest bet is to follow Irvin and serve the party.
Well, Irvin doesn't require that. Irvin said it was okay, but it doesn't require that.
I'm sorry, I don't. Why wouldn't Irvin require the attorney of record to be the attorney for purposes of service? I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
In this case, you didn't serve, you served the City of Cleveland.
Correct.
Essentially, you served the party. And whether you want to say that the city attorney is the attorney of record or not, you served the party knowing there was previously counsel. Just in normal litigation, you serve the last known attorney and then until you're informed that they're not still on the case.
There's no formal way for Mr. for an individual to become attorney of record in an arbitration. And I think if you look at the factual circumstances in Irvin, in there, the two parties for the plaintiff and defendant were using alternative dispute resolution to try to resolve the matter. So everybody knew that the defendant was represented by an attorney because he was negotiating on the defendant's behalf. But this court in Irvin said that he might be their attorney, but he's not their attorney of record in this particular action. And well, I think that's the distinction, is that this is a very separate matter from an arbitration, which is an informal proceeding where your attorney might not be.
I understand. Right. And I understand your situation is different because it's collective bargaining, but some arbitration arises out of litigation.
Right.
And so how do we draw the line there if we say that it's okay not to serve the last attorney under Rule 5? Because just as you've taken passages from Huff that the other side says is dicta, we could run into the same.
So I think that an arbitration that runs through litigation, you might already have an attorney of record established. I'm not saying that we should ever ignore an attorney of record. I'm just saying that the attorney of record under Irvin, you're not the attorney of record until you file something in that particular case. And so if it does arise through litigation, in the middle of the litigation we go to arbitration, there is an attorney of record in that instance that would accept service.
And there's a case number then too.
And there would be a case number. You'd file that easily as a motion because there's a number associated with it, yes.
I mean, I guess, you know, part of the problem with both, you know, with either rule is, or any of these rules is that you worry about, you know, gamesmanship, right?
Correct.
When you know, there might be a situation, if we adopted your rule, there might be a situation where it was really clear that attorney was going to represent a party in the arbitration. Maybe you'd been, maybe someone had been communicating with them about that, and then, you know, say that person represents a big corporation, and then you send it to their corporate offices in the hope that service won't get to the attorney within 3 months. I mean, mm-hmm. How do we avoid that kind of problem if we adopt your rule?
So I think that Irvin does, I mean, it currently works, right? Our rule is just apply Irvin. There are scenarios where there's an attorney, but not an attorney of record yet in Irvin, so you don't serve the attorney, you serve the attorney of record. I think if you look at the Champion Chrysler Plymouth case that came out of the Southern District of Ohio, which I recognize is not binding, but it really provided the court with the perfect set of facts. There, the arbitration attorney received a copy of the motion to confirm, and after the statute expired, the arbitration attorney called the plaintiff and said, I'm sorry, but I can't accept this service because I don't represent him. He's not my client anymore. And because there's no formal way to notify the other party by way of a filing that your attorney has changed, in that case, it really demonstrated why the rule in Irvin was necessary, and the Southern District of Ohio applied Irvin in that case, saying that the party was the only proper party for service when you initiate a case.
Yeah, I guess the challenge is, at least, you know, at least I've represented clients in civil practice, and you know, sometimes service doesn't, you know, it takes a long time for things to make their way through the process. And, you know, if there's an attorney on the case that you know is on the case, why shouldn't someone be required to serve them? I guess that's what I'm struggling.
Right, and I think it just comes down to I might know that Mr. Crissy was their attorney at arbitration, but I don't know that he would be their attorney of record in a new case. I can't know for sure, which he did acknowledge at the trial court in front of Judge Russo, that they could have switched attorneys. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, unless you have it. Okay.
We have one final question. Okay. Would it have been wrong or improper for you to serve the City Law Department and Zash and Rich firm?
I think that serving Zash and Rich might have been, it wasn't required. Could it have been done? Sure. But I don't think that's what is required of Irvin.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
On behalf of the City of Cleveland, Mr. Crissy. Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is George Crissy, and I represent the appellee, City of Cleveland, in this case. Your Honors, this case is very simple. The OPBA did two things wrong. They filed the wrong type of document to challenge the award, and they served the wrong party.
What about Ms. Chaffin's argument that there is no case number unless it's a complaint.
Well, this is very funny, Your Honor, because just around the same time, I filed a motion to vacate an arbitration award in the same court, Clerk of Courts, Cuyahoga County. I had no problems.
Well, what, did it have a case number?
Yes. I mean, what I filed was an application, but it was, as counsel for OBBA says, it was a motion, okay? Its content was written as a motion.
But what was the case reference? What was the case number reference to?
There was no case number reference other than I made a reference to the AAA number that the case was under. And that's what I put in my my application to vacate.
So you styled an application, just like they put an application in their title.
Again, it's not the title, it's the content that matters, Your Honor, because when you...
Well, I don't understand that. I don't see any provision of the civil rule that defines what a motion is. So I mean, you seem to have this definition of a motion that I can't find in the rules anywhere. So
it's in the rules, Your Honor. In fact, our brief talks about
what provision?
The Rule 7 talks about the contents of a motion, what should be in there, particularly the need for a certificate of service, which this filing...
The only thing that didn't make theirs a motion was a certificate of service?
No, Your Honor.
So what didn't make it a motion? They had all the elements that were required.
They did not have all the elements. What they had, they certainly didn't have any citations to authority. They didn't have any arguments. Let me ask Your Honor to compare what they filed
initially.
So maybe
it wasn't a very good motion, but that doesn't make it not a motion.
Well, let me make an analogy, Your Honor. It would be you put an apple on...
We get motions from litigants that are, you know, a paragraph and don't have any citation of authority all the time.
Well, and then that would be a noncompliant motion, and in cases that we have cited in our brief, courts have held that's not an adequate argument to raise a point in order to get the court to rule in their favor. The difference...
That doesn't make it... It may not be an adequate argument, but doesn't make it not a motion, I don't think.
Well, again, Your Honor, there's a difference between what is and isn't a motion and what is not adequate. What they filed was not a motion. It was a complaint. It was notice pleading.
But it said application also, an application to...
But the statute says the application is in the form of a motion. That's what that's what 2711.05 says. That's what 2711.13 says. It is in the form of a motion. When counsel for the OPBA says that they filed everything they needed to, they filed the arbitration award, they filed the collective bargaining agreement, they filed the record in the case. The one thing they didn't file, which counsel for the non-moving party would need, is a detailed recitation of their arguments so that we can file our brief in response. What we got was a complaint. You don't answer a complaint with a brief in opposition. You answer it with an answer, and answers aren't appropriate, as courts repeatedly have held in this situation, because what a motion is not a pleading, and an answer is. What happened effectively is that by filing such a bare bones notice pleading, you put the burden then on the non-moving party to then come forth, try to guess what the real arguments are, and I would ask Your Honors to compare what they filed with what they filed several months later as a supplemental motion. Okay, the difference could not be more stark. What they filed was more than 25 pages long, was structured as a motion, contained detailed arguments, many of which were not cited in their so-called motion that they filed at the beginning of this case. That's what we needed at the very beginning filed, and they had 3 months to do it. Keep in mind that it's different under a 2711 proceeding than your typical appeal. And keep in mind also that the arbitration is, the motion to vacate is more in the nature of an appeal from a lower body decision than it is the initiation of a new case like Irvin. Irvin did not involve a motion to vacate. It involved a brand new lawsuit. There's a big difference between the two.
Was there a proof of service on the application?
No, there wasn't, Your Honor, please.
It's required by Civil Rule 5, correct?
It is required by Civil Rule 5, and it certainly is clear that what they filed and what they thought they were filing was a complaint that they were filing through the court to be served by the clerk of courts by service of process. It's not a motion. And the statute is very clear how you serve motions. Rule 5 says you serve it on the party if they're not represented or you serve it on the council if they are.
Let's talk about that.
Sure.
Because this does not seem nearly as clear to me as it does to you.
Okay.
The statute says that you can serve the party or you can serve the attorney.
Right.
And then it says in the manner provided by Rule 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why wouldn't the ordinary reading be manner is exactly that, the manner in which service is provided, whether it's by personal delivery, whether it's by email, whatever. Why do you think that that reference to Rule 5 overrules the rest of the statute?
Because Rule 5 makes it very clear who you serve, not just how you serve
it. But the statute says who you serve. It says you serve either the party or counsel.
And exactly what Rule 5 says as well. The language in
27- let me finish.
Please.
So if that were the case, if the purpose of Rule 5, the purpose of the statute were simply to reference Rule 5, why would it say the party or counsel? There wouldn't be any need to mention either one of them.
Well,
that's all surplusage, right?
It's not surplusage. It's trying.
You could strike that language. You could just say its service should be provided in the manner provided by Rule 5, and you wouldn't have to say attorney or party. So,
but again, what the statute would think the General Assembly was trying to do was to make the language parallel to Rule 5 to make it very clear which parties could or could not be, or should or should not be served. And Rule 5 makes it very clear when you serve an attorney and when you serve a party. And parties are only served when they're not represented by counsel. Now, keep in mind, who is counsel and when counsel is established? That's not my argument. That's this court's holding in Cox. This court has already decided that in the case of an arbitration where the party is represented by legal counsel in the arbitration and a party files a motion to vacate, the person to be served is the attorney of the non-moving party in the arbitration. That's exactly what happened in Cox. This court went to great lengths to try to determine who was the proper party to be served, because in that case, the moving party, by the way, filed a 15-page motion, not a complaint, but a motion. The party first served the school board through the clerk of court's office. And when you look at the docket sheet in that case, where it says counsel for the Board of Education, it's blank, just like any other motion to vacate that's initiated in court. But the next day, the moving party then mailed, by certified mail, the motion to the counsel for the school board, and this court said it was that service that counted, not the service on the school board, but the service on the attorney. And then it proceeded to decide whether the moving party had in fact filed their motion to vacate within the 3-month period and concluded that she had filed it on the very last case. This is 7-year-old precedent. What Pope PA is relying upon is a case
in Cox, they serve both parties, right?
They serve both parties.
So,
yes.
So it's kind of, I think, your point is kind of dicta.
No, it's not dicta, Your Honor. When the court, in a separate section of its own opinion, first decides who's the proper party to be served, and there were arguments made by the school board that even service on the attorney wasn't proper service because it wasn't received by the attorney until after the 3-month period. So who the party was made a difference in terms of the arguments the parties were making to this court, and this court affirmatively decided at that time that it's the board's attorney or the employer's attorney or the non-moving party's attorney.
But the question in Cox was really whether service was made by mail, by putting it in the mail, right?
Which
that was the question, and in Cox, both parties actually had been served.
And in fact, in Cox, the court couldn't even get to that issue until it first decided who the proper party was to be served, and the proper party, according to Cox, this court in Cox, was that it was the attorney for the non-moving party. I mean, that's very clear law. Irvin is not a motion to vacate case. Irvin is your run-of-the-mill lawsuit. It's a very different type of situation than the case that we have before you, because in a lawsuit, you have no record. You have no prior relationship or prior proceeding below in which you can determine who the attorney is for the other party. And so it's not surprising that the court in Irvin said that there was no counsel of record established. Here, as the court said in Cox, we do have counsel of record established because counsel represented the city in the arbitration below. The union knew it because the union was also at the same arbitration. They knew who our attorneys were. With respect to my statement to the court, it was a hypothetical question. I first tried to decline by saying, no, that's not the case, and look at what happened in the two prior cases that the court had decided that, in fact, it didn't actually happen, and it didn't happen here. Okay, we're not here, Your Honors, because the OPBA got stung by some gamesmanship. And by the way, many of the cases they cite in their brief are gamesmanship, not by the non-moving party, but by the moving party.
Isn't this gamesmanship a little bit on your part? I mean, what, you know, you have, your client has a collective bargaining agreement with the OPBA. You clearly knew about, you knew that they had initiated proceedings. Why not just arbitrate? It seems like gamesmanship. It seems like you're trying to get out of your collective bargaining agreement based on a technicality.
Actually, Your Honor, we did arbitrate the case, and the city won.
Why not allow them to go forth their appeal? Why not let the court hear the case?
Well, then I guess let me turn the question on you, Your Honor. Why have rules of service if they're going to be ignored?
Well, I guess I was just asking you because you said the other cases were about gamesmanship and this one's not. But this seems just as much gamesmanship as any of those other cases.
Well, it isn't gamesmanship, Your Honor, when
you're both are trying to avoid the merits of the issue based on a service question.
Well, but again, you don't even get to the merits of the issue unless you initiate the case the right way, and they didn't do it that
way. I'm sure that's what they would say in all those cases you're calling gamesmanship, too. It's the exact same issue, right? They said, well, we don't get to the merits because you didn't initiate this the right way.
Well, then let me suggest to you, Your Honor, maybe the simpler proposition of law to come out of this case is not what the union is arguing, but as was suggested by one of your colleagues, that when you're talking about the attorney to receive service under 2711, it's the attorney below unless there is some indication otherwise. That's consistent with the court's ruling in the Cox case. And until the city actually decides that it's going to have different counsel, then that's the counsel that receives service.
What do you say about the argument that the attorney in a case is not necessarily the attorney of record?
Well, but that's not this case, Your Honor. And basically, and we pointed out in our brief, what they're basically saying is somehow or other the relationship between the city and its attorneys in a particular proceeding somehow or other is extinguished and has to be reestablished. And if that's the case, how is it that the OPBA was able to reestablish its relationship if, in fact, there is no assumption there? It's simply a proposition that has no basis at all in anything.
What do you mean, how is the OPBA able to establish its relationship?
Well, if we're not going to be presumed to be the city's counsel once the arbitration decision is issued, then neither is the OPBA.
And let's assume that that's true, but it would be once the OPBA then said to their counsel, we want to file a motion to do X, Y, or Z.
Which is fine. We didn't know about that. That's the point, is that was a private conversation. I knew, and I had a conversation with the city, that we were going to represent them at all times in this case. They knew it because I was there in the arbitration. So it's not gamesmanship. And keep in mind why we are here. We are here not because counsel relied on the Irvin case. We're here because counsel did no research.
Counsel, when is it appropriate for the law director to step into your shoes? The 8th District found that the record shows that Cleveland was solely represented by outside counsel.
Yes. And I would say it's appropriate. Let me give you the example. They relied upon a Cuyahoga County case where they filed an application to vacate and served the county and the law department. And that was the case they relied upon to say we're going to do the same thing here. But the difference was, in that case, the county was represented by its in-house counsel. And so the proper party to serve in that situation would be the law department, because those were the county's lawyers for that arbitration. And that's exactly what they did. They served both the county and the Law Department. Your Honor, I see that my time is up. If there's no more questions, I would ask that the court uphold the ruling of the 8th District and dismiss the union's appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Chafin, you have a minute, 26 seconds left.
Thank you. I would like to first draw attention to the last few words of Civil Rule 5, B4, which states that service can be filed separately on the docket. It doesn't have to include a certificate of service, and here I did file service separately on the docket. Service in this case was identical to the service in Cox. There they used the docket evidence service. It wasn't a certificate of service, and in this court in Cox would have frankly been without jurisdiction to even issue its decision if not attaching a service was a fatal, not attaching a certificate of service was a fatal flaw.
Counsel, was there a resolution of counsel to make the law director the attorney for the city of Cleveland on this matter? Because I'm looking at the charter.
True. And it does say that, and not to my knowledge, and frankly, I was never given any reason before the trial court or the 8th District why Zashin and Rich even has authority to be the city's attorney.
We're talking about the law director. The law director will prosecute and defend all suits for the city of Cleveland when required to do so by resolution of counsel. So is there...
There's separate sections. I want to say, I don't have it in front of me, section 87 says that the law director shall be their attorney in all civil suits.
I understand it's modified by section 85. So why did the 8th District say that the record shows that Cleveland was solely represented by outside counsel?
Frankly, I don't know. I think they were just following their previous decision in CPPA. I think it's without support.
That's interesting. Thank you.
I will say that the four or five words in Cox does not determine that Mr. Crissy is the city of Cleveland's attorney of record in this case. There was absolutely no discussion in Cox whatsoever about who the attorney of record would be. We didn't talk about Irvin. Your opinion didn't discuss why this is different from Irvin. It didn't provide an exception. Frankly, it was complete dicta, like Justice DeWine stated, because both parties were served within the required 3 months. It didn't matter who the attorney was. Or was not. And if you watch the oral argument like I did, the attorney for the employee actually stated that the party would have been the proper party for service. So I don't think Cox is determinative in any way on our first proposition of law. Irvin should be. And I do think Cox speaks heavily to the issue of service, because there was an entire paragraph written about service. Mr. Crissy talked about treating this like an appeal. If you look at paragraph 14 of Cox specifically, they rejected treating this type of case like an administrative appeal. That was an argument put forth by the employer in Cox. I think if we interpret the word attorney here to mean, within 2711, to mean arbitration attorney, we are inviting all kinds of exceptions to Irvin. There are numerous times where a plaintiff knows that the other side is represented by a specific attorney. It happens all the time, whether it's through contract negotiations or pre-litigation settlement discussions. But Irvin says it doesn't matter that you know the attorney is the attorney. It matters that they become the attorney of record, because there's the ability to switch the attorneys without formally notifying the other party. And so here they had the ability to switch attorneys without formally notifying me. You know, usually in a trial court or in an administrative appeal, the notice of appeal goes to the initial tribunal that's hearing that case. And so I know who the attorney of record is, who is supposed to receive that notice of appeal when I file that, because you have to get permission to switch attorneys from a tribunal. You have to provide notice to switch an attorney when you're in a tribunal. Arbitration is not a tribunal. Frankly, arbitration is a very lax form of alternative dispute resolution.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.